It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. We're live tweeting the program at KUOW. Tonight, you could see a clown if you want to. Cirque du Soleil clown Jeff Roz is speaking at Hale's Brewery as part of Seattle's annual Moisture Festival. I know, I said the M word. I'm sorry. That's what it's called. Seattle started the Moisture Festival in 2004. It's a theater festival, and this is before America decided it despised the word moist. Here to discuss words that we love and hate is former Merriam-Webster lexicographer Corey Stamper. Her new book is called Word by Word. Welcome, Corey.
Thanks so much for having me.
Moist tops the American list of hated words?
I think so. It's pretty high up there.
Why?
You know, I think some people don't like the combination of sounds in it, the M and the L that goes with it. I think some people, the word association with what gets called moist, people tend to go, ew, gross. They associate it with bodily functions.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think most of it is, you know, it's kind of a viral thing. It's low stakes. You can hate it. It's not a controversial opinion. And you know, it's a word that you can hate that nobody will contradict you about.
Yes. That's kind of my theory about these things that come up. This is a recent phenomenon, right? I grew up, cakes were moist. That was the nicest thing you could say. Seattle is moist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you want your skin to be moist. You put moisturizer on. But just, it's recent. It's the last few years.
Yeah, it seems to be the last few years. And you're right. Moist just goes with certain words, like moist cake. Mm. You don't want wet cake.
Yeah.
A damp cake, that's grosser than moist cake.
So when all of a sudden everybody hated moist, I thought, you know, that I think that's because, and I relate to this, it feels really good to have an opinion, strong opinion about something. And if the stakes are high, well, that's scary. But if there's really nothing at stake at all, you might as well attach yourself to the idea to be one of those people who just hates the word moist.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and it feels kind of good.
Yeah. I like to tell people who hate moist that there is a worse word.
Really?
To hate. Yeah. It's
what is it?
The verb moistify.
Oh.
Everyone in the studio just jumped.
Yes, we have our professional tweeter, our social media producer, Bree Ripley, is sitting on my left, and she flinched visibly at the word moistify.
Moistify.
So again, language advisor, I apologize for that. On Facebook, Kelly writes to us that she doesn't like the word mucus because it sounds like what it is. And that I can understand.
Right.
Like, you know, moist could be a cake, but most cakes are delicious without having any, little or no mucus in them.
That is true. Yeah. They probably should not have any mucus in them.
Is there a word that you hate?
You know, so professionally, I love all words, but I absolutely have feelings and opinions just like anyone else. I really dislike the word impactful.
That's near the top of our list on Facebook, impactful.
Yeah.
Why do you have a problem with that?
I think it just sounds too jargony. It's sort of, I think it's overused. But, you know, I mean, professionally, honestly, I've had to revise the entry for impactful. So
why?
Because every, you know, 10 years or so, we go through the dictionary A to Z, and you just look to see, does this have any new meaning? Does it have any new connotation we need to cover? And impactful happened to be one of the words I was assigned. And so I read a whole lot of businessy, jargony things that use the word impactful. So, but you know, it stuck around in the language. It's got to have a place and a reason for being there.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So first of all, you don't like it because it's jargony. What is that about? That's a lot of Facebook posters. They don't like impactful. They don't like deliverables,
right,
and monetize. What's psychologically behind that?
I think part of it is the people dislike business jargon because it's an inside language. It's jargon. And people often complain that business jargon dilutes the meaning of language, right? Instead of saying deliverables, why don't you just say the thing you bought? Or instead of saying monetize, sort of rewrite it and say, this is how we're making money. But the fact is that, you know, business jargon, there's lots of jargon that doesn't seep out into the broader language. And the jargon that does, like monetize and impactful and deliverables, they have application beyond business. But people dislike business jargon in general because they don't like anything that sounds kind of squirrely.
Like, it sounds BS-y.
Yeah, too. Totally. Yeah.
Nicole writes, I hate the word impactful, but now find myself using it more and more in my nonprofit work due to peer pressure and word count limits in grant applications.
Absolutely.
And the word count, that's a thing, because the both examples you gave, monetize and deliverable, you said, why not just say things we can make money from? But those are all many, many words. If there is one word, for example, I feel the itch about jargon. I resist it too. I mean, this is my job to write. But the word parenting, I had the same reaction that everyone did. But I got to say, when someone says parenting, I know exactly what they mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't there something to be said for one word? I'm sorry, it's new, but it is efficient and descriptive.
Right. And I think that you've touched on something that is a big complaint of people's. They talk about hating words because they are new. And there is this perception that the word is new. We already have words that must describe this. New things are degrading the language. And the fact is that's actually how language thrives, is through new words being coined and being spread abroad. And there are lots of words that are business jargon that just stay within one industry or don't last for very long. And, you know, the ones that do, that's actually a sign that the language is doing great.
Sounds like impactful might be here for a while.
It's definitely going to be here for a while.
much as even lexicographer Corey Stamper doesn't like it. Yeah, deliverable, actionable was another one on mm-hmm. people's list on Facebook. I noticed people not liking, is abbreviation the word? OMG?
OMG,
LOL.
Yeah, you can call it an abbreviation or an initialism, or an acronym. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it the same thing? What do people not like about acronyms?
I think what people don't like about acronyms, and especially ones like OMG and LOL, is they're associated with young people. And we hate young people. I mean, that's sort of this trope that has been in English literally since the 12th century, that young people are ruining the language.
Uh-huh.
And so people hate OMG because they feel like it's texting jargon, it's young people being lazy. The best thing about OMG is that OMG actually goes back to 1917. And it was first used in a letter to Winston Churchill from an admiral in the British Navy.
You cannot get more cred than the grammar Nazi crowd than bringing up, which he literally fought the Nazis.
Since one, literally.
Yeah. So thank you for the literally. That's two. okay. So you might be a century old and use the word OMG.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's, by the way, in case you don't know, oh my God.
Right? It is indeed, oh my God. And in fact, the very first written use we have for it uses OMG, and then in parentheses, that admiral writes, oh my God. So we know that the OMG he uses is the OMG we use today.
Yeah.
OMG.
OMG. That's my reaction to that news. We're talking to a lexicographer, former Merriam-Webster lexicographer, Corey Stamper, and her new book is called Word by Word. And here we turned on the bat signal on the roof at KUOW, asked for some input. And do you know Matthew Inman from the comic strip? You know Oatmeal?
I know.
Good, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, he lives around here, a friend of the show, and here was his reaction.
Hey, okay. This is Matthew Inman. I'm the author of The Oatmeal. And the word I hate today is Q, as in line. And the reason for this is when you spell it, you can actually say the entire word just by spelling the first letter. You spell the letter Q, and you're good. And then every letter after that is just like that guy who hangs around at the end of a party after everybody has left. It's just a string of ooh-ee-ee-ee-ee after the party's over. It's like, go home.
I guess he may be making a case for just spelling Q, Q.
I think that's the case he's making. And, you know, I'm down with that. I do have to say the word Q, Q-U-E-U-E, is a pretty old word. And it's been around it's been around for about 300 years now. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it's so squirrely, the reason it has all of these extra letters, is we can blame French for that, because we actually took it directly from French. And if we had thought about it, we could have shortened it, but we just took it from French and we got used to saying Q-U-E-U-E, and there it is.
But if you shorten a French word, now we're back to OMG. People would think that's lazy and lowbrow to shorten a European word.
Yeah, it's true. It is a catch-22.
How about people who text K instead of OK? just to save one letter.
You know
what? Stick around.
What's fascinating about that? I don't know if that'll stick around, but there is a whole linguistics around whether you use okay, okay, A-Y,
mm-hmm.
okay, okay, K, or KK.
KK?
KK.
It's dangerously close to KKK, though.
It is dangerously close. That's why we stop at two
okay. In
the texting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a linguistic study about this, and generally, particularly younger folks, and I know this because I have teenagers, and I had to learn this when I started texting them. If I text them okay, either the word or the two letters, they think I'm angry at them.
Really? If you
yes.
say okay, so they want K as
like
reassurance that you're being jaunty and casual?
Yeah, just a single K is a way of saying, okay, I got what you're saying and I'm going to do or say or whatever. And KK is a more genial way of saying, all right,
oh,
thanks.
So KK is even sweeter.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, lowercase or uppercase?
So I do the uppercase, lowercase. My kids do both lowercase. Well, that's not true. My youngest does both lowercase. My eldest does uppercase, lowercase.
So some people, now we're into whether an uppercase letter means you're yelling.
Right. And, you know, I have kids and they know I yell, so I figure they'll get over it.
And this isn't quite a word, but speaking of this kind of thing that you have to show that you're I'm being non-threatening here. Everything's okay. Is the exclamation point? I find that it's everywhere. It's as if you don't put exclamation points, and even better would be multiple ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then people will assume that you're being dour or you're scolding them or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I refuse. I'm keeping the exclamation point out and let people think what they will. But maybe that makes me a jerk on.
Well, you know, I think there's something to be said for both things. I think, you know, when you get through the American educational system, you learn, particularly in formal writing or business writing or anything like that, that you want to stay away from exclamation marks because that's, you know, the joke is you get three to use in a lifetime.
Yes. And
you don't want to use them all at once. But I also think that we use so much written communications just for everyday stuff now. We text about things. We email constantly. Nobody makes phone calls anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are some people who are reclaiming the exclamation mark as a way of sort of bringing tone and register to an email. So sometimes if I'm setting up an appointment with somebody I haven't seen in a while, I will use the exclamation mark, you know, can't wait to see you.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know.
But I can
hey.
Wait. I can wait to see you. I'm just looking forward to it, period. It's not really an exclamation mark. However, I love emojis. So
I'm
all over them out.
Yeah,
yeah
hey.
They're great.
Yeah. They're
because you have so many choices, you don't have to misuse an exclamation mark. You can just throw something in that's approximate.
That's true.
On Facebook, by the way, we're talking about words that we love and hate and why with lexicographer Corey Stamper, author of the book Word by Word. And we're doing this on the occasion of the Moisture Festival in mm-hmm. Seattle. They may not have named it Moisture Festival if it were today because it's so apparently hated. On Facebook, John Tall writes, I hate hubby. I heard this from a lot of people, hubby. They don't like hubby. John Tall says, I hate hubby and prego for mm-hmm. pregnant, probably because the people who use the word hubby also use prego.
Well, there you have it. That's airtight logic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of words that get shortened like that that people hate because they sound infantilizing or cutesy. So I checked. Hubby is really interesting. Hubby actually goes back to the 1600s.
Really?
Yeah. Which surprised me. I kind of thought maybe 1800s, but it goes back to the 1600s.
You thought maybe 1800s. I love that because we've talked about this a bit now that chances are the thing that you think is cutesy and juvenile mm-hmm. is probably really old.
Yeah. In fact, the whole thing of shortening words. This goes back to the 1200s, 1300s. There's a great poem that uses the word haps instead of happenings, sort of like what's the haps? And that's 1467, I think. So, So, you know, I mean, the thing about words, you're free to dislike whichever words you want.
Sure.
And that's fine. But I think what gets dicey is when you start making assumptions about people who are using the words that you dislike so much.
Because what's an example of an assumption?
So, like, the people who use hubby and prego. Let's use that. Because I'm not keen on hubby or prego either.
Yeah, I would not use those words.
Yeah, I wouldn't. You know, you automatically have in your mind, when you say I don't like hubby and prego, you have a picture in your mind of the type of people who use hubby and prego.
Unironically.
Yeah. And you sort of go, I'm not like those people. And so you immediately begin imbuing your dislike of this word. That transfers to your, you know, ties into this dislike of a type of person.
It's tribal.
Yeah. And that's when it starts. That's when personal preferences start getting a little dangerous linguistically. Because I think we just assume the way that I talk is normal and the way everyone else talks is wrong.
Oh, yes. We are the good people.
That's
we
right.
know who the bad people are. Oh, amen. This is lexicographer Corey Stamper. Let's see. Eileen says, I hate the word panties. That was off a big one on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Again, maybe partly the infantilizing. But
yeah.
You're going down a sex road as well.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
mixes with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole says, I hate the most words that don't exist but are often used, irregardless.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Irregardless might be the most hated word.
Even more than moist.
I think even more than moist.
I think you're right. It's had more staying power.
Yeah. You know, irregardless goes back to the 1700s, if you can believe it. And when it first came into English, it was completely normal. It really only started being seen as uneducated in the, you know, early to mid 1800s, when the people who originally used irregardless out in the country began moving into the cities. And this sort of gets into this idea of the language that I use is better than the language that you use. In the 1800s, in America, we started preferring the way that people in cities spoke, and the way that we talked about city language was it's educated, it's sophisticated. And so if that's educated and sophisticated, then obviously the people in the rural parts of the country must not be educated or sophisticated. So irregardless actually has a whole history of people saying it's really a terrible, uneducated, non-word. But the fact is it actually has enough print use in edited prose by really educated people to make it into the dictionary.
That surprises me because there is a redundancy to it, right? It seems like it was a mistake, even if it's a 100-year-old mistake, irregardless.
So when it first came into English, I have done some research on irregardless, and I actually think it was an emphatic form of regardless.
Oh.
It's sort of a way of, you know, can I have the car? No. You know, but Dad, you know, regardless of the weather, I'm a good driver. And if my dad says, irregardless, you know, the conversation's over. We're
yes.
not having any further conversation.
Ah.
And so I think it has sort of this nuanced meaning that just doesn't translate well in print. Also, you know, a lot of English is really illogical. You know,
yes, yes.
We have inflammable, that means to set on fire. We have unthaw, that means to thaw.
Mm-hmm.
Ravel can mean both to knit up and to unknit. So, you know, I mean, this is a feature of English and not a bug.
I always had, tell me if my theory is wrong, that one reason people don't like that others get to use something like irregardless is it's like what education I have is kind of like money in my bank. It's something I own. It's something I have that's valuable. And if people can say irregardless and get away with it, then it's devaluing. Then the fact that I know that irregardless is wrong just lost its value. So it's like you're deflating the value of my assets.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not proud of that.
Yeah. Oh, no. You know, I think the thing is it is human nature to want to be the smartest person in the room. I mean, everybody does this, even lexicographers. And I think that once you start looking at the way English actually moves and changes, and you start realizing that a lot of these things that you think are just flat out wrong actually have a particular context where they're not wrong, you do get defensive because we spend a lot of years of our lives learning all of these really crazy rules that about English and what are good words and what are bad words. And
right.
The minute you learn that it's not about good or bad, but it's about context, if you have made your entire identity about, I know that irregardless is a bad word, well, then, yeah, that's threatening.
Exactly. Better put. You're good with words. Her book is Word by Word, The Secret Life of Dictionaries. This is lexicographer Corey Stamper. We got And by the way, I noticed you said a couple times, you said the fact is, and the thing is.
Those are
things that I avoid. Tell me about why you, lexicographer, are okay with the thing is.
You know, so it's called the double copula. And it's a habit that I've gotten into. And it's also kind of typical of my particular dialect of English. People see the fact is as sort of a marker of an introductory, you know, noun phrase.
Uh-huh.
And then the fact
is
that.
Yeah. 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 I get that.
Yeah.
I'm not judging you.
Well, I get called out for it quite a bit.
Really?
I do.
I'm not the first.
You're not.
No offense.
No, I take no offense.
But do you feel that we all have our own idiolects.
Yes.
And sometimes it can be a source of judgment.
Oh,
right?
Of course.
If it's not prestige. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So an idiolect is your own personal way of speaking, and it combines sort of your dialects, which tend to be the varieties of English that you grow up speaking or that you're exposed to. So my dialect is general Western American English, but I now live in a place that speaks Mid-Atlantic English, and so my idiolect is a weird combination of general Western American English, so I will say howdy, and Mid-Atlantic English, so I will say hoagie and use the Philly word John. So
what's John?
John is the most amazing word. John is basically a word that substitutes in for thing.
How do you spell it?
J-A-W-N.
Oh.
But it can mean thing, it can refer to a situation, it can refer to a person. So you will hear on the buses in Philly someone say, oh yeah, he's got a side John, meaning he's got someone on the side.
It sounds kind of like joint to me.
It is actually exactly from joint.
So I could do this all day, as you know. I want to leave on just a few happy notes. We've been talking about words we hate. Carlin loves the word sesquipedalia.
Oh, yeah.
You know it?
Oh, sesquipedalian's great.
Carlin says it means long words, literally words that are a foot and a half long.
Yep.
I love the idea of going 50% farther than you should, trying not twice as hard, but 50% harder. It makes it seem more achievable.
Yeah, it's a great word.
Do you have another word you love?
You know, I really love the word gardy-loo.
What's that?
Gardy-loo is spelled G-A-R-D-Y-L-O-O. And the reason I love it is because it seems ridiculous to me that it exists at all. It is an interjection that is defined as used as a warning cry in Edinburgh when it was customary to throw slops from upper stories. And it's part of why I love it is it's just a funny sounding word, but also the fact that it's so specific, used only in Edinburgh in a time when you threw waste out the upper stories, and that it has enough written use to make it into a dictionary is just magical to me.
Finally, on Facebook, Bob says, I love the word ephemeral because it sounds beautiful, though its beauty lasts just a moment.
Oh, well done.
Corey Stamper is the author of Word by Word, The Secret Life of Dictionaries, out on by Vintage. And we're talking on the occasion of Seattle's Moisture Festival. Despite that name, we've turned on that name since it began. It was a pleasure. Corey, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.